Greetings, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for a very nice introduction. Here we are already, and a year has almost passed. I often think of the words of my mother, who often said, "The older you get, the faster time flies." And I'm sorry to report that she's right. Seems like just a few days ago, we were all at the Feast of Tabernacles, and here we are, almost done with yet another year. So, here we go. You know, brethren, there is something in the human mind that loves a mystery. Even from the time children can crawl, they love to discover and explore. There is something of an explorer or a discoverer, I think, in every one of us. I can recall our younger years, my wife and I, very often would listen to mystery theater on the radio, even though television was the preferred media at the time, as it is now. We found ourselves drawn sometimes to this radio show and the mysteries they gave us on it. Even today, we find revealed new mysteries in almost every form. There are movies, television programs, internet, and documentaries inviting someone or everyone to discover new things about this earth, about our solar system, about our environment. One of my favorites, and the favorite of my son, is How It's Made. If you ever watch this, you'll find out just about how anything is made, from pencils to telephones to lamps. I guess down deep inside, he and I both are somewhat of a gearhead, as they call it. We like to know how things work. There's something about the human mind that loves a mystery, loves to unlock a new secret. But if we look closely, we find that the greatest mysteries of all are not the product of human imagination, but you'll find them in the mind and heart of God. If you would please turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. The title for today is Stewards of the Mysteries of God. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 4. And my speech and my preaching were not with persuasive words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not be in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. However, we speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages to our glory. There are two short points today. First is, what is a steward? And a second, a brief look at some of the things God has placed in our care. A steward is a custodian or trustee of someone else's property. In ancient times, it was not uncommon for a steward of a household or business to be chosen from a group of slaves. There was a strong parallel here in that we are all called out of the slavery of sin to serve God. We have the example of Joseph, who started out as a slave but was made chief steward to Potiphar. Ultimately, he became chief counselor to Pharaoh himself, and second only to Pharaoh. Among other things, it's expected of a steward that he have close, detailed knowledge of the property he is in custody of, how to store it, how to keep it safe, how to maintain it. The property in the steward's custody is prepared at all times to be kept in readiness for use by the master. A steward can be chosen for special training or rulership. It was possible even in ancient times that a steward might rule over other slaves or even other stewards. This, of course, is a chief steward. It was even possible for a steward, even though once a slave, to eventually be given his freedom. In like manner, we have been given freedom from sin. A steward may be expected to perform certain accounting functions or maintain an inventory. We find this example in the parable of the unjust steward in Luke 16. Above all else, a steward is required to be faithful And this is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 2. There is a great difference, however, in being a steward of this world, these physical properties, and being a steward of God. First, God will share with us. We are heirs of God and joint heirs with Jesus Christ. This is found in Romans 8, verse 17. God does not want his inventory merely to be stored for safekeeping. He expects it to be used for our growth and our development. This is found in the parable of the talents, Matthew 25. If you would please now turn to Romans 16. Romans 16 and verse 25. Now to him who is able to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery, kept secret since the world began, but is now made manifest or revealed by the prophetic scriptures made known to all nations according to the commandment of the everlasting God. And here's the reason: for obedience to the faith. Now, if you would please turn to Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1, beginning in verse 24. I now rejoice in my sufferings for you and fill up my flesh in what is lacking in the afflictions of Christ for the sake of his body, which is the church, of which I became a minister according to the stewardship from God, which was given to me for you to fulfill the word of God, the mystery which has been hidden from ages and from generations, but now has been revealed to his saints. To them God willed to make known what are the riches and the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Him we preach, warning every man, teaching every man in all wisdom, that we may present every man perfect in Christ Jesus. Perhaps as faithful stewards, we might take a minute or two and make a bit of an accounting of these things that we have been given. First, of course, is God's Sabbath day. This is a great mystery of God, because most of this world is totally convinced the Sabbath is tomorrow. But as I've often discussed with our pastor, you can take even a brief reading of the Gospels or the book of Acts and you run right into the Sabbath and the holy days. So our knowledge of the Sabbath, not only the correct day, but of what it means, is a great miracle. Along with that, the holy days of God. It's often been said that God reveals himself in his Sabbath, and he reveals his plan for humans in the holy days. And this is very true. And we have the resurrection from the dead in a world that's convinced once again that they're all going to heaven. Born again. We understand that one is not born again at conversion. We understand that one is begotten of God. We are born to spirit at the first resurrection. There is the great white throne judgment, symbolized by the last great day. With anyone, with someone in the grave, this is a very exciting time. And we have recently put to rest two fine ladies in the Church of God who are sleeping. And we know their next thought will be the return of Jesus Christ in the first resurrection. There is the duality of prophecy, which we know very often prophetic writings have a forerunner, which is fulfilled in a final second fulfillment. Add to that the identity of the last generation of the house of Israel. This reformats the entire Bible. The doctrine of the first fruits. We know that this is not the only day of salvation. We know that we are first fruits of God's creation. And the grace of God. We now live in a world that believes the grace of God is merely acknowledgement of Jesus Christ as Lord. But we understand that grace entails much more than that. We are reminded in 1 Peter, first chapter 4 and verse 10, that we are stewards of the manifold grace of God. The grace of God entails much more than that. It's the grace of God that allows this planet to circulate in a perfect orbit that permits life. It's the grace of God that allows atmosphere in the next breath. It is the grace of God that allows man the next heartbeat. The grace of God entails the love and concern of God for mankind, the whole spectrum. And now we've come to one of my great favorites, life on other planets. If you would please turn to Romans 8, you know where I'm going with this one. If you read the news this week, you know that we've discovered a new planet, which today everybody says is Earth-like. This planet is some, if I'm correct here, it's about 600,000 light years, and plans are already underway for someone or something to go visit this planet. Many millions and billions of dollars have been spent on a space program just for one question: is there life on other planets? I have a quotation here I got from the internet from one Harold Urey, a renowned chemist, winner of the Nobel Prize for his work with isotopes in 1934. And this is what he had to say. Life is not a miracle. It's a natural phenomenon and can be expected to appear whenever there is a planet whose conditions duplicate those of Earth. And that's what men believe they found today, a planet just like Earth. But the God of creation would take issue with this idea. It's not convenient for man to admit the existence of God or the miracle of life. All man has to do is listen to his Creator. If you would please, Romans 8, beginning in verse 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption to the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know the whole creation groans and labors with birth pains until now. How wonderful are the mysteries of God, and just as wonderful is that he has appointed us, his church, his people, to be trustees of these magnificent truths. How astounding also is the trust God has placed in us to have these truths. We're now in the time of year, and most people have their focus on a fat man in a red suit. This is usually a difficult time for God's people. Because as one learns to serve God through the years, one learns to love truth and to hate lies and deceit. And you know, I often wonder, my big question is, how does he manage to get up and down all these chimneys with all the cookies and all the milk? Why doesn't somebody buy this man a car? It's got to be cold riding around in a sleigh. But you know, these things are temporary. If we stay close to God, be patient, we find that this will pass, and we have yet another spring, and you have yet another cycle of holy days. In like manner, these things will disappear permanently. There is a time coming when there will be no room for this kind of celebration. In Habakkuk 2, Chapter 2, verse 14, we find, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. You know, you can fill a glass up with water, anything up with water. Water immediately assumes the form and shape of the thing it is contained in. It will fill every crack. It will fill every crevice. It will even do so at the microscopic level. You can't fill up anything more than you fill it up with water. Imagine a world, if you will, so filled with the truth of God. That's what's coming. As this society continues once again to begin its winter celebrations, which we know are empty and futile, we have a better choice. We can lament and complain, as I do every year, or we can choose something different. We can remember what we've been given, remember who we are. We are the church of God. We are the elect of God. And we are the stewards of the mysteries of God.